Good morning and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. It's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and joining me on the program this week is Dr. Stephen Escaldi, Medical Director of the Spasticity Management Program, JFK University Medical Center, Johnson Rehabilitation Institute, board certified physical medicine and rehabilitation physician, and is specialized in neurorehabilitation and spasticity management for the past 25 years. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Joel. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So let's jump right in. The spasticity management, you've been doing that for 25 years. Not a word, unless you're dealing with it, that you hear very often. So what specifically is a spasticity?
Well, the best way to think about spasticity is a general term that we see. It's an issue that occurs whenever there's an injury or a chronic illness that affects the certain areas of the brain or spinal cord. And what could happen is you have you end up with this overactivity of muscles that presents as various presentations, including muscle tightness, spasms, restriction of movement. And these things can be quite painful, and they can interfere with function. They can limit your recovery. So that's what really overall spasticity. We look for any of that overactivity of muscles that we can address.
And what causes that?
So, again, any injury to the brain or the spinal cord. Mm-hmm. The most common examples and things we treat are stroke patients, brain injury patients, spinal cord injuries, spinal cord illness such as hereditary spastic paraplegia, multiple sclerosis, mm-hmm. And adult cerebral palsy. Those are my primary populations we see.
All right, so it's something you could be born with, or it's something that could happen from some sort of an accident.
Correct.
So tell me about, give me a good example, if you would, about a patient that you've treated or that you are treating.
I treat numerous patients from all different categories, but most commonly stroke and brain injury are the key people that I see. Mm-hmm. One of the more common presentations of spasticity is the stroke patient, and they're pretty good as the ideal model of how we see spasticity. And typically what happens is, usually when you have your stroke, if it's significant enough to have some muscle weakness, typically over time, not necessarily the first couple of weeks, maybe a month to 6 months after, you may start to develop the stiffness in the muscles. Quite often the most common thing stroke patients experience is tightness in their hand, where their hand gets clenched like a fist or closes very tightly. They get tightness in the calf muscles, and the foot ends up being pushed down or turned in. Common possibility is a shoulder gets drawn in against their chest, making it very difficult to put their shirt on, very painful putting their shirt on. So these are classic presentations we see with stroke patients, and sometimes it could be significant enough that it impairs their ability to recover.
Is this something that can happen years after a stroke, or is it usually happen?
It can happen any time along the recovery process, but okay. Quite often that 3 to 6 month time period is where you start to notice it. Sometimes it may not be problematic, and you may not notice a problem until years later. So it all depends on the patient. So very specific to the patient. You know, some patients, the increased tightness may not have an impact on them, so it doesn't bother them. Others, it can be so devastating that they can't even move body parts that they have function in.
Yeah, because I have a family member who had a stroke years ago, but it wasn't for, I'm going to say, like 10, 15 years before they started having pain and difficulty in using their hands. And it's gotten progressively worse.
All right, so part of the spasticity, the increased tightness, is it's kind of on two levels. One level is the neurologic process, the control of the muscles through the brain down to the muscle level and back up to the brain. That's the neurologic process. That's what makes the muscle fire without much control. Then the other piece that kind of goes along, coincides with that part as well as gets enhanced by it, is the muscle itself, the elasticity of the muscle. What could happen is over time, if it's constantly firing and shortening, the muscle elasticity goes away and it becomes fibrotic, and the stiffness in the muscle tissue itself. So that's probably accounting for why years later people are having an issue.
So it's no longer stretchy. Like, it's almost like a rubber band that gets, or I guess it's probably,
our muscles are meant to be elastic and like a rubber band. And what I usually say is the rubber band becomes tight and it ends up like a rope. And once it becomes like a rope, there's not much flexibility there.
Now, when you diagnose this, are there multiple tests involved, or is it something that's very simple to diagnose because of the information you're getting from the patient and you know their medical history?
Yeah, it's basically, one, when you have a certain diagnosis, we expect to see it, and two, it's clinical. You can see it, you can look for it, you evaluate through physical exam, and also, of course, through the patient's symptoms.
Okay, so no MRI or anything like that, it's just...
No, I mean, usually when patients come to me, we know, typically, that I had a stroke, I know where it is. You know, sometimes location of the stroke is more common that you have problems with spasticity, but, in general.
So if depending on where the stroke is, you can have a different result?
Correct. There are certain stroke patients that are lucky and they do not have spasticity develop at all, and others... And the most common ones typically do. We usually say about 40% of stroke patients that are, you know, the stroke is significant enough to cause muscle weakness will potentially develop spasticity.
Would you give the example of the shoulder or the hands? Does that depend on how the stroke happens and the severity?
Correct. So the more severe and the location has to do with kind of tracts that end up being damaged. So... You know, the most common presentation of a stroke is that middle cerebral artery where the arm is more affected than the leg, where you have a lot of weakness in the arm. Mm-hmm. Typically, those type of patients are the classic presentation with the spasticity. Also, brainstem strokes are very severe issues with the spasticity as well. So those are the area examples of the area of the stroke that would key you to look for spasticity.
Okay, can we get into the way it's treated? Like, give me an example. You named a couple right there, a couple of different types of strokes that causes a certain type of spasticity, and then how that's treated on a daily, a weekly, a monthly basis.
Yeah, so the treatment is geared specifically towards the impairments and the disability caused by the tightness. Mm-hmm. It could be as simple as just I need to do stretching and showing the patient the proper stretching to do, doing their exercise program to maximize their strength. Those are the kind of the mild end of the spectrum, and the kind of step ladders from there. You can, you know, we always say the stretching is your mainstay. That's, you have to do that all day, every day. Things like bracing to help us. We get splints that will hold our body parts in certain positions that we want to keep them in, give you a nice prolonged stretch. There's oral medications that help reduce spasticity that occurs everywhere in the body. So if you're a stroke patient, imagine half of my body, I might be feeling tightness. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I need some medications to help with that. And going further on, we have injections, where botulinum toxin injections, where we put the medication directly to the trouble muscles to help make that effect. So, for example, I have a very tight fingers. My fingers are clenched into a fist. I could inject muscle the botulinum toxin into those particular finger muscles that can relax them to open up the hand. There's also things we do called nerve blocks, where we address the nerve and put some medication on top of the nerve, such as alcohol, that would loosen the muscle as well. And finally, there's surgical interventions. One of the things are intrathecal baclofen pump, which is another generalized approach. That's a surgical approach where a device is placed in the body and gives medication into the CSF, the fluid in the spine, to address the tightness at the receptor site. And there's also surgical approaches where you can do things with the tendons themselves, where you can cut the tendon, lengthen the tendon, realign it, and put it somewhere else to cause a different effect.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all there. Also, you can cut some things called neurotomies, where you take the overactive muscle, you can remove the input through the nerves, which is a very complex approach. But all these things are on the table, and depending on how severe, how long it's been there, what the patient's goals are, you know, we kind of gear towards one or the other.
Okay, so you don't start with one and see if that works, and that doesn't work, so we'll move on to the next one. It's all based on after, you know, obviously the examination.
Right. And quite often it's depending on the severity. If it's early on and it's not so debilitating, you could say, all right, let's start with this. You know, we do the therapy with the stretching. We could start a little oral medicines. So you have some time. There's a window where you can try a bunch. When it's severe enough and it's been there for a long period of time, you might have a different approach. You know, if I had a stroke 10 years ago and I've been dealing with this for 10 years, I may have a different approach than acute stroke.
Mm-hmm. But it's not just people with strokes, correct?
Correct. I see all comers. Anybody that has any disease or process that would cause the muscles to be overactive. There are things like cervical dystonia where their head gets positioned in a certain way because of tightness in muscles in the neck, which is just comes on, you know, for no known reason sometimes. So they're all different presentations that we deal with.
What about something like ALS?
ALS is certainly, it's one of those disease processes that presents with spasticity early on in the process. The process with ALS is initially you have this spasticity that shows up, and then as it progresses, you actually lose the spasticity, you lose all the muscle bulk and activity, and you become flaccid. So it's a window where that does occur, but we do have ALS patients where we use, you know, our same approaches, different medicines. Quite often, if they're severe enough, the intrathecal baclofen pump is the main way to address them to make them comfortable.
Is there ever a time when it's completely eradicated, the spasticity? I mean, I guess not for ALS patients, right?
Correct. So I always say what we do is called spasticity management, not spasticity complete fixing.
Very, I see. Okay, right.
A small number of patients where this presentation is minimal or it's not as severe, we do have the ability to kind of keep it under control and it goes away and it doesn't bother them. But, you know, you could imagine if you have an injury in your brain, if you have a stroke or an injury in your spinal cord, the effects are not going to go away. The goal is to minimize the impact on your function and minimize the disability it causes.
And improve your movement.
Improve your movement.
Yeah.
Improve your comfort. Improve your overall well-being. You know, it's not nice being when you're... You'd imagine having a cramp or a Charlie horse all day long kind of affects your mood as well as just your function.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Escaldi, Medical Director of the Spasticity Management Program. You've been doing it for a long time. What's an example of some of the newer technology that you've seen that have made it a little more easier for the patient and for doctors like yourself?
Well, believe it or not, the technology has been very similar from the start till now. It's a little bit, we have a number of more, you know, increased number of toxins available in the U.S. There's three that we can use for spasticity, where we started out with just one. The devices to help us localize injections have become more sophisticated. For example, you know, prior to, you know, when we first started, they didn't have any kind of localization, so it was just you pick a muscle, you put the medicine in. Now, you know, if we've developed different types of machines, such as an EMG machine, where we get to hear the muscle activity. We have certain nerve stimulators, so muscle stimulators, that we could see the activity. And now recently, ultrasound is where we can physically look at the muscle and watch the needle go in and put the medicine in. So that kind of refined the approach, where we can be a little bit more specific to treating.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the intrathecal baclofen pump, that's been refined. The technique has been refined, so it makes it safer and more predictable. So that's an example.
Then you've seen through the years that patients have been able to, through your assistance, manage the spasticity much easier.
Yes,
it's more success.
There's more options. There's more success. You know, with the introduction of things like certain devices and rehab techniques such as, you know, robotics and things like that, that's developed. So they have more things to help, more aids to help things get better. You know, electrical stimulation products, all these things assist. They're part of the toolbox that we use. So we keep adding a little bit more tools to help it.
Is it like a constant spasm? Is that a fair description?
They're combinations. So you can just imagine being just like your elbow. So when stroke patients, sometimes when they walk, their elbows kind of bend and they flex at the elbow and it becomes higher and higher as they walk. Mm-hmm. It's quite annoying. So you can imagine your muscle firing at all times when you're trying to do something or you're trying to extend your arm, maybe trying to reach out to grab something. The bicep, the one that bends your elbow, doesn't know to relax, and it fires and fights the tricep, which is extending your arm. So you can imagine how uncomfortable it would be trying to do something, and this two muscle groups are fighting each other, making it very hard to do things, hard to be specific.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's I guess when you said it's like having a Charlie horse all day long, it's like, so not only is it uncomfortable, it's painful.
It could be very painful. Some people have very bad spasms where they go to move and their muscles fire up, their hamstrings tighten up so strongly that their heel touches the back of their leg. So it could be that severe. And the goal is to minimize all these problems, minimize the amount of spasms, minimize the impact that the spasm has on their movement and the spasticity has on their movement. So that's where the management comes in. If you can get it to a point where they say, I'm functioning, I'm good, I'm comfortable, that's what we're looking for.
You're saying your heel hits the back of the leg, so it kind of kicks up involuntarily.
Correct.
Are there any other I'm sure there are. What are some other examples that would be similar to that?
Well, you can imagine the sticking with the stroke patient, the foot. Quite often there's something we call the equinovarus foot, and that's a process where the foot gets forced into full plantar flexion, meaning your foot points down, like a ballerina being on your tippy toe,
mm-hmm.
and also it turns in. Think about spraining your ankle when you turn your ankle. There's patients that have severe positions where that foot pushes down and in, and they're trying to walk, and every time they try to walk, they sprain their ankle, they injure themselves. Of course, they can fall down if you don't have a solid foot to stand on. So that's a common problem where we have to work to address the position of the foot to help them walk better.
Dr. Stephen Escaldi, Medical Director of the Spasticity Management Program. So we talked about ways to manage the spasticity with stretching and other things that you mentioned. What are some things that you would tell your patients not to do because it could make it worse, whether it be certain foods or what have you?
Not necessarily, foods. What not to do, worst thing that you can do for yourself is nothing, meaning not do any stretching.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest things we can kind of impart to our patients is getting them to understand that this is a lifelong process that you have to battle against. So having them buy into the fact that exercising and stretching and wearing their splints and taking their medicines, all those things will help them, because if it doesn't, if they don't do those things, the potential for that soft tissue stiffness and the contracture, which comes from those muscles becoming little ropes, that's going to happen. And then you can intensify the pain, you can worsen the function. It's great when we have family members get involved, and if you're lucky enough to have a spouse that's willing and able to help you do things, a daily stretching program. It's great when you see family members get involved, and they say every morning we get up, we do 15, 20 minutes of stretching in the morning, we do it in the afternoon, and then before we go to bed. Those are the patients who will be better, and they do better.
So I was going to ask you how long. So you said about an hour a day, breaking it up in three parts?
It depends on the patient themselves. There are some patients that go to the gym 5-6 times a week. They can stretch, they work out for hours at a time. And there are others that really can't handle much, and I say, if we can just get them to do a couple of sessions a couple of times a day, 15, 20 minutes at a time, I'll take it, because that at least keeps them moving, and that's the goal, keeping them going.
Yeah, well, what about walking or running or playing sports?
It depends on the deficit. If you're able to do those things and it's safe, by all means, we want to keep them going.
It may not be helpful, but it's not going to hurt the patient.
Well, certain patients. I have certain patients that have that bad foot, that equinovarus foot,
mm-hmm.
and they want to go run a marathon when they really shouldn't be running a marathon because they'll injure themselves. So you have to kind of give them realistic expectations and realistic goal setting.
And what about like hot or cold weather, or is there any type of atmosphere that they need to avoid to make it worse, or is that patient by patient as well?
Patient by patient as well, but in general, like for example, the stroke patient, again, the winter time is always worse for our spasticity patients, because as you get colder, you and I, we get stiffer when it's cold outside.
Mm-hmm.
That just is intensified with them, so they're more uncomfortable. It takes them longer to loosen up, so that the winter time is tough for me and our patients because we're working harder.
Yeah, so it's hard. It's harder in the cold then.
Harder in the cold. And most people also benefit from using kind of warm modalities, like a a heating pad or sometimes a hot tub.
Mm-hmm.
All those types of things can help loosen up those muscles.
Yeah, which you would do even if it's not
as like everyone
anytime
else.
You have a tight muscle, sure.
Yeah.
Most people will just take like a Tylenol. Does that help?
There is a pain component, but it's not going to necessarily help the process that's causing the spasticity. But if there is pain involved, certainly it can help.
Or those hot cold patches that they advertise.
Yep, those patches sometimes help. Again, everybody's different. Some people, they say, I've tried 10 of them, one of them helps, so you go with what helps. Anything that's going to make you feel better, you do.
Yeah, just trial and error. All right, so you mentioned, before I let you go, you mentioned toxins earlier. Now, to the normal everyday person, that sounds like poison. So tell me how you use, what the toxins are and how you use them to treat the patients, if you would.
So the three products that we have available in the U.S. to use for spasticity are botulinum toxins, and they're Botox. These are brand names, Botox, Xeomin, or Dysport. Everybody kind of knows that the Botox that's been around longer. So it technically is a poison, is a toxin. The toxin that causes botulism, that causes weakness everywhere, this is a refined product of that toxin. It's a very dilute form, a very purified form that's made. And what it does is it affects the way the muscle itself fires. So by injecting this small amount into a certain muscle that is overactive, you kind of interfere with the way the muscle fires, and it causes relaxation of that muscle for a short amount of time. Typically, we say there's a three-month lifespan for the toxin, where it's going to peak at its effect at around 4 to 6 weeks, and then slowly the body kind of undoes the benefit. So the reality is you can inject that muscle, get a response in 2 to 4 weeks, you'll get a good response, and then as it wears away, the goal is that it doesn't wear away all the way back to the start. You're in a better starting place in 3 months than you were before,
mm-hmm.
and then we can kind of chip away to kind of get an even keel where the muscle activity is not as bad as it was when we started.
But it doesn't stretch the muscle. And the reason I ask that or say that is because when I think of Botox, people who use it, say, to get rid of eye wrinkles, they inject it in their
right.
head.
Wrinkles come from the muscles being overactive and causing the wrinkles.
Muscles
are firing, so you're stopping the muscle from firing and then relaxing that muscle.
Okay, so it does work the same way.
Same way.
Okay. Doctor, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us on the program.
You're welcome.
Dr. Stephen Escaldi, Medical Director of the Spasticity Management Program at JFK University Medical Center, Johnson Rehabilitation Institute, board certified physical medicine and rehabilitation physician, specializing in neurorehabilitation and spasticity management for a quarter century. Thanks for joining us, Doc.
Thanks for having me.